This podcast of The Business is a production of KCRW Santa Monica at 89.9 FM, webcast at kcrw.com, and distributed by NPR.
Support for NPR podcasts comes from Visa, offering the Visa Signature Card, featuring concierge services for travel, dining, and entertainment at visasignature.com.
From KCRW in Santa Monica, I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner, and this is The Business.
So you still want to do the show business? You think that you got what it takes? I mean, you really gotta rap and be all that. But prepare yourself for the breaks. Check it out.
The HBO show Entourage goes deep inside the business of show business. This week on The Business, we go deep inside Entourage with the show's creator, Doug Ellen. But first, it's the Hollywood News Caravan. With fewer carbs than the salmon and creme fraiche pizza from Spago, it's The Business from NPR. ValleyWag, the Silicon Valley blog, reports that despite Viacom's $1 billion copyright infringement suit against YouTube, Viacom is using the video service to do some infringing itself. Last month, Viacom had kvetched that YouTube was, quote, building traffic and selling advertising off of unlicensed content. And yet, blogs on sites for some of Viacom's shows are using YouTube to violate the copyright of non-Viacom TV shows, like Oprah, The Simpsons, and Saturday Night Live. It gets even better. You've heard of money laundering. Well, get ready for content laundering. ValleyWag also reported that bloggers at Comedy Central, one of several cable networks owned by Viacom, exploit a service called SceneMaker, which lets users tag and cut online video. Once copied over, the stolen video looks like it's hosted at SceneMaker rather than YouTube, and the YouTube logo is stripped off. You know what we say here at The Business. People who live in glass houses shouldn't call the kettle black. In other news, you can add another soul to the boulevard of broken dreams, high-definition DVD. Hollywood's become addicted to profits from the sale of DVDs, but growth has stalled, and the business is jonesing for a new fix. The new high-definition DVD format that was supposed to come out last Christmas, and then again this Christmas, should have taken off like crack cocaine. But the studios squabbled over competing technologies the way they did in the beta versus VHS videotape war. Only this time, it seems that both sides have lost. The death certificate was signed by DreamWorks co-founder Jeffrey Katzenberg, who last week pronounced the new DVD format DOA. Said Katzenberg, it's a, quote, niche business that's not going to become the next platform. Who will save the movie business's bacon when it comes to home video? Naturally, video games. Last week, New Line Cinema became the latest studio to join the Xbox Live video download service. Microsoft's service lets game players who own an Xbox to download movies and watch them on their TV. Paramount, which had joined the service back in November, also announced that they will offer their movies for Xbox download in high def. So forget trying to pry your kids off the sofa now. Speaking of fat little sloths, a new study from the Kaiser Family Foundation has found out why more and more children are starting to resemble Jabba the Hutt. Forget what they're being fed by you. Your TV is feeding them a steady diet of junk food ads. Researchers found that tweens see roughly 20 food ads a day, and nearly two-thirds of them are hawking candy, salty snacks, sugary soda, or heart-stopping fast food. A review of more than 8,800 ads in the study couldn't find a single commercial for a fresh fruit or vegetable. Ay, chiquita! And that's the Hollywood News Caravan. Coming up, watching TV to learn about the movie business. HBO's Entourage is about to launch its fourth season. We thought it'd be a good time to take a look at the show business precepts it embodies. For the uninitiated, Entourage is a sharp-tongued dramedy about four New York friends living in a big house in L.A., one of whom just happens to be Hollywood's newest young megastar, Vincent Chase.
It's a talk show. They ask you questions, you answer them. Hey, what's up? Well, not much. How you feeling? Pretty good.
There's his tragicomic, older, has-been actor brother, known as Johnny Drama.
Scarlett Yo, huh? You know, I had a little lost in translation moment myself back when I was doing that TNT movie, Summer Fall. Isolated from the rest of the world, just me and this little beauty, Lauren Jennings.
They shot that movie in Pasadena.
Yeah, but I didn't have a car.
Vince's lifelong friend and new manager, E, the conscience of the show.
All right, Vince. Look, I picked your last movie. I put you in this new movie. I know you. I know your strengths. I know your weaknesses. Yeah, you do have a few.
And the foot soldier and clown prince, Turtle.
See, I'm a multitasker.
Oh, yeah, you're a regular Martha Stewart, Turtle.
You know, at any point, am I going to get any credit from anyone?
We'll see, Turtle. We'll see.
Also key to the show is Vincent Chase's amoral, hyperactive, but fiercely loyal agent, Ari Gold. But more about him later. Entourage is ostensibly a smart, well-written, and very funny buddy comedy that just happens to be set in Hollywood. And yet, they've managed to really capture the subtleties of the business, rather than just the shop-worn stereotypes. For instance, you might have heard that agents can be slow to call their clients back, but Entourage reveals some of the very good reasons why. That's largely because the show was inspired by the experiences of former boy band idol-turned-Oscar-nominated actor Mark Wahlberg, who is one of the show's executive producers. Wahlberg turned to his manager, Steven Levinson, to find someone to create the show that would become Entourage, and Levinson hooked him up with another one of his clients, filmmaker Doug Ellen. Doug Ellen, welcome to the business.
Thank you.
Let's talk about Vincent Chase. Mm-hmm. Vincent sort of goes through life with a nonchalance mm-hmm. that's interesting, mm-hmm. and I'm wondering how much you think that comes from the millions or how much that comes from you're born with it.
I think you're born with it. And I really, you know, a lot of people I speak to say things about him, oh, could anyone really be that calm? Can anyone really let things go? But there are certain people, I don't happen to be one of them, but there are certain people that can waltz through life like that and seem to make it look easy. And everyone says, oh, is that all movie stars? Of course it's not all movie stars. There are crazy, driven, psychotic movie stars, and there are movie stars that let it come to them, and it all seems to work out. We try to give him that. I mean, we try to give him in Vegas episode. You know, I've been with guys in Vegas who can drop $50,000, $100,000 and it doesn't seem to bother them. And I have guys who drop $500 who have just as much money and want to kill themselves. So, you know, it's a personality thing. And I think Vince, at the end of the day, while a lot of people look at him as completely nonchalant, he deals with what he has to deal with. He fights for what he wants to fight for. And he doesn't waste a lot of energy on things that don't matter to him. So,
where are you going?
I'm not feeling it right now. You can't force the cards.
How much are we down?
110 each.
Jesus!
We'll get it back after dinner.
I'm not hungry, Vinny.
You take the reins. Maybe you'll have better luck. Don't go too crazy. I don't want to lose more than 500 grand.
Bring it. Bring it!
Well, what's amusing about that particular scene that you're referring to mm-hmm. is that Ari gets in way over his head
right.
in Las Vegas,
right.
and it really has to be the multi-million-dollar player who kind of bails
right.
him out.
Right. Well, I think that, you know... But
more than money in that scene, there's nature's being revealed.
I mean, I love that scene, and, you know, that really is me and my friends in Las Vegas. Me being Ari without the millions of dollars and going crazy that I'm losing it, and my friends who are just having the best time and going, well, who cares? And I think that was a really interesting scene to look at them. Ari has more money than Vince. And probably, you know, has the knowledge that he will continue to make more money. There is no ups and downs for him, probably, you know. He has a discernible skill that can keep going and going, whereas Vince could be a flash in the pan or any number of things. But Ari's the one who's losing his mind. And Ari is the one who's driven to never lose, whereas Vince is the one who really believes things will work out. They always have for him. And you know, that whatever. That's either genetic or from childhood. Who knows? But... when you hang around a guy, and what's interesting about those types of movie stars that I have had the pleasure to hang out, they're enabling good times for people. They make people feel better around them. They feel, you know, there is that sense of wonderment of how does this guy just walk through life, which we all know people like that. They just seem to, everything seems to strike gold. They don't seem to work that hard. They seem to just have fortune on their side.
It's interesting to hear you describe it in those terms, that they're providing an experience for people, even off screen,
mm-hmm.
and that in some ways I think that experience is addictive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, E, for instance, the manager. You know, when he's away from Vince, his girlfriend says, "You're addicted to him."
You know, when I went to the reunion, people would come up to me and say, "So what are you doing?" And I'd say, "I'm Vince's guy."
Are you here to talk about business?
No, you're going to talk about us. It's kind of the same thing, right?
No, not to me it isn't. You know what your problem is.
No, but I have a feeling you do. So tell me.
You are addicted to Vince.
Great. More textbook psychobabble. Come on, let's hear it.
When you're around him, you feel great. But when you're not, you go through withdrawal. And you talk about quitting all the time. Classic addiction symptoms.
So what, this is all my fault? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, you're addicted right. to this guy. You sort of realize, who am I without him?
Right.
Talk a little bit about that.
I mean, I look at that in a different way because I don't look at that as addicted to the celebrity. I really do, and people, you know, have a hard time separating that out. I believe these four guys, if they were living in New York right now, working at the local bar or the fire station or were policemen, they'd have the exact same relationship. Vince would be the better-looking guy, getting the girls and somehow making a little bit of extra money. Eric would be the one going, this is stupid, we should not do this. Turtle would just have fun, and Drama would be miserably insecure all the time.
Let's talk about casting the role of Vincent Chase, because you had sort of your work cut out for you here, and because this is someone who has to be smooth and easy and unruffled, and at the same time can't really be a known actor because...
Right. Yeah, I mean, you know, getting Adrian, I mean, the whole thing was sort of miraculous, but... he didn't necessarily need to be that way because that wasn't really where we started. You know, when we first wrote the script, it was more of a Mark Wahlberg type of guy. It was a tougher street kid who's got some edge and who doesn't take a lot of crap. When we started casting, which you can see in the movies today, there is nobody like Mark. There's nobody at that age that really has that. And if they do, they'd probably be a star by now. So Steve Levinson represented Adrian, and he kept saying, Adrian, 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 which, you know, I can say for me, it was like, this is not what we were writing. This isn't what we were going for. And when Adrian came in and did his first audition, we saw a whole different show, which ultimately I think worked better for us and gave us a more sensitive Vince, you know? Adrian walked in, and the second he started his audition, there was something about him that has that X factor that you can't explain. And when we did the pilot, you looked at him on that red carpet. I did, and that's when I knew we had a show. I mean, everybody else around him, they're all brilliant, but if you don't have a guy that first step is a movie star, it just has an aura of fakeness, which we've seen a million times in other movies and shows where you just don't buy it. You go, I don't even believe this guy's a movie star. And sometimes they actually are movie stars, and you still don't believe that they're movie stars just because the way they're conveying their presence. And Adrian has that thing. He just seems to glide through, and he seems to be like just a foot off the ground when he's moving, and everybody seems to just be drawn to him. And I think that's one of the interesting things about the character, now we've written it that way, is he doesn't have to say so much. He doesn't have to be so aggressive because he just always is the center of it. And there are scenes where I feel he's the one guy, if he's not talking in the scene, I still feel like he's the center of the universe, and you feel that.
Orbiting rising star Vince Chase at the center of the Entourage universe is a flaming ball of gas, his agent, Ari Gold.
They're out to a guy, I don't know if you've ever heard of him, his name is Tom Cruise.
Tom Cruise, you gonna play Pablo Escobar? Oh, come on, the guy's not even Hispanic.
Yeah, and Hilary Swank has a and she won an Oscar pretending she has a That's what actors do, they pretend.
I get it, okay. So what if Cruise passes?
Then they go to Brad Pitt, he passes, they go to Keanu Reeves, and on down the list.
And where is Vince on that list?
He ain't on the list.
Well, how do we get him on the list?
You do Aquaman, you stupid f***.
The character of Ari Gold is based loosely on Mark Wahlberg's real-life agent, a powerful partner at the Endeavor Agency named Ari Emanuel. Much of what you can learn about the business of show business on Entourage comes from the crass wisdom of the fictional Ari. In this scene, he advises Vince's manager and friend, E, about handling their star client.
You deal with talent the same way you deal with women. You have to make them believe that they need you more than you need them.
He doesn't need me that much.
Of course he doesn't need you. You're f***ing worthless. I get a million morons to come in here and do the job. That's not the point.
Now what is the point, Ari?
The point is that he is an insecure f***. Like all beautiful but handed everything on a silver platter people. He doesn't trust anyone in this world but you. You've been born into royalty, baby. You know that. Now you just got to be thankful and wear the crown.
There are certain Ariisms which reveal something about Hollywood. There's a moment where Aquaman... this big tentpole action movie that Vincent has already starred in and is now going to be released. The opening numbers are coming in a couple seasons back, and Ari says,
and the over and under is 95. We hit 100. I got.
Well, I'm just saying. I mean, Spider-Man did what? 114. Is there any way we can beat that?
Spider-Man. Who said anything about Spider-Man? Eric. Tell me that Vinny doesn't think that we're going to beat the biggest opening in movie history. I tell you what, manage your client's expectations. Do your job. Thank you for ruining my day.
You know, do not talk to him about what the numbers are. Mm-hmm. Manage your client's expectations.
Yeah.
What are some other Ariisms that you feel are Hollywood precepts?
Well, that's definitely a big one, but you know, we've done things, but never call your client unless you have good news, you know?
Tell them I'm not here.
Really?
Yeah, first rule as an agent is you never take an angry client's call unless you have good news that will make him smile, all right?
So, I mean, you have to give bad news at the end of the day, but don't call him back with no news, you know? And I think a lot of artists, myself included, are, you know, they're instant gratification people. And, you know, my manager, Steve, and Ari will both tell you, like, I want to hear answers. I don't want to hear, hey, I'm checking into it. We'll find out. So I think, you know, there's kind of an interesting thing where they won't call you back. And you start to, you know, when I was younger, I used to go, well, why aren't they calling me back? You start getting insecure about it. And the truth now is they don't have anything to say to you. So I think that's a big one. Don't call a client back unless you have something to say, you know. You fire a man, you create a rival. You fire a woman, you create a housewife. And I think that's, you know, one of his things. Be careful who you fire. Be careful who you get rid of, because you never know when they're going to come back to bite you. But he's got hundreds of them, you know.
I have to say that one of the things that might seem a bit of a stretch is that Ari, who's supposed to be one of the biggest agents in the business, is so accessible. I mean, the idea that Turtle is just strolling into his office, hey, Ari.
It's real.
It's real.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's absolutely real. And, you know, you'd have to get some agents in here to talk specifically about their stars. And, you know, but I can tell you for sure, you know, there's been entourage members working at the agencies, golfing with the agents, and all that stuff. I mean, the real Johnny Drama hangs out with Ari. I mean, he hangs out with the real Ari. They'll, you know, play golf at their country club or, you know, wherever it is. So it's pretty realistic look at it, you know, when you're dealing with, and again, there's different ways to.
So there's a certain leeway that big stars get.
Absolutely. You know, and friendships do start to grow. I mean, I don't think it's all necessarily a fake thing because he's the star. We let him do this. But, you know, if you hang out with, you know, Mark and his friends, they're charming, entertaining guys that a guy like Ari might not have thought he was going to hang out with when he first saw them. But when he starts to...
You're referring to Mark Wahlberg.
I'm referring to, the real Mark. And I think once those guys start to gel, they form a relationship like anything else that may not have been, it may not have happened if they were in college together, or it may not have happened, but because of circumstances. Then, of course, there are the phonies who just go, you know what, you're going to talk to my people and you're going to deal with them. But that's not what we try to portray on the show. We do really try to portray the realistic version of these guys and how they would interact with this guy. So we really don't make it theatrical.
Talk a little bit about the nature of friendship in a business context,
mm-hmm.
as we see it through E.
Well, it's a lot tougher in real life than on the show, I think. I mean, it's probably one of the creative licenses I take is to try to keep these guys innocent and keep them in a place where they were 17. When you get into the real world, it's tough to find four guys who are all fighting for the same things that get along as well as these guys do. But, you know, business can break people apart. And it's rare to find people who can work together and be best friends. And it happens every once in a while. And it's, you know, fortunate on this show, we kind of have that going on behind the scenes. Steve and I, you know, Steve Levinson and I know each other since, you know, we're 19, 20 years old. And Rob Weiss is an executive producer on the show I went to high school with. So we've been lucky to have that, but it's not as prevalent in Hollywood as I think the show showcases.
We're talking to Doug Ellen, the creator of HBO's Buddies in Hollywood dramedy, Entourage. We'll learn more about real-life show business from make-believe show business when we return after a short break. You're listening to The Business from NPR. This is The Business, and I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner. We're talking to Doug Ellen, the creator of HBO's Buddies in Hollywood dramedy, Entourage. Entourage is HBO's show about a young movie star named Vincent Chase and his entourage. His oldest friend and manager, E, the potty-mouthed horn dog and foot soldier, Turtle, and his older brother, the tragicomic misanthrope, Johnny Drama. The height of Johnny Drama's fame was starring in the low-rent sci-fi action show Viking Quest. He's been reduced to appearing at comic book conventions in his Viking outfit, signing autographs and yelling,
"Victory!"
Johnny Drama
is
in some ways pivotal because he is the specter of failure that kind of hangs over everything. That you know, at one point Ari says, "I don't represent clients, I represent heat."
Right.
And you know, Drama is pretty cold.
Yeah.
And he's pretty cold not for any clear reason. He was, you know, sort of a rising star at one point, and then it just sort of he cooled.
Yeah. The tragedy of this town. And there are people, Kevin Dillon, for instance.
Who plays Johnny Drama.
Johnny Drama, who's one of the great television actors, comic actors of the last 25 years, I believe. And he, you know, was not having the easiest time before this show came around. And
for proof of this, you know, in some ways, Kevin Dillon is hotter than Matt Dillon right now.
Well, I mean, you know, it's interesting because, you know, I used to get very offended. We do all these interviews and people would go, are you really, you know, is that why he was cast? Because he's Matt Dillon's loser brother. And I grew up, I idolized Matt Dillon when I was growing up. Like, the Flamingo Kid was very influential in the character of Eric in this. I watched it 50 times because I wanted that kind of naivete. But when people would say that, I'd be like, you know, and I didn't really mean it. I was being blustery. But I said, in 2 years, Matt's going to be Kevin's brother. Now, I didn't really mean it, and it was probably not a nice thing to say when I was defending Kevin at the time. But the truth is now, they both hit it very big. Matt got an Oscar nomination last year, but Kevin has really crossed over into that thing where you walk down the street with him and people are screaming at him. You know, we had a bus full of high school wrestlers pull up to the set all screaming victory, victory at Johnny Drama. And it's such an amazing moment as well as a sad moment to watch a guy like Kevin who, you know, like all of us on this show, to be honest with you, we all had our struggles. And I don't think our talent levels were any different 5, 10 years ago than they are now. We've grown. We've matured. But Kevin was just as good 5 years ago as he is now, and people looked at him in one way, and now it's a completely different thing. And it's, you know, it's the sadness of this town. And, you know, even looking at this show, I mean,
that there's a certain arbitrariness to success
there
in
is,
Hollywood.
And you have to be seen in the right light. And I've said that in this show. The right actor in the right role, the right writer in the right script will become a very different thing. Even for me, you know, I had made two, you know, very small movies that got picked up by studios, and I, you know, people thought I was going to be X, and it just didn't happen. The movies came out, they didn't do well, and I sat around for years with no job. And Steve, who's been my manager for ever, he had this idea sitting in his closet for a couple of years, and until I decided to write another script, and he said, "Wow, you know what? You'd be right for this." Even my own guy sort of forgets, and that's what happens. And it's a weird thing. You feel it in yourself. You start to forget even with your friends. After a couple of years, the town starts to make you go, maybe they don't have it. You know, maybe something's wrong. But the truth of the matter is everybody just needs the right break at the right time, the people with talent. And, you know, a lot of it is finding a way to persevere through humiliations, which, you know, we try to put through all of these guys, but it's a humiliating town. It's, you know, it's eye awakening, and you have to have really, you know, it's a cliche, but you need thick skin to get through unless you're just lucky, you know?
There are other characters that play really pivotal roles in underpinning the structure of Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking of Debbie Mazur's character, the flack, basically,
right. Yeah.
The publicist.
You know, Richard, you are a spindly Weasley. And I swear to God, if you print that about Gary Busey, I'm going to do everything in my power to ruin your f***ing life. I'll see you back at the office, Christy, all right?
All right.
And stay on top of that.
Yeah.
At one point she says, you know, he's agreed to do Jimmy Kimmel live and has not conferred with the powers that be in
right.
publicity or marketing.
Well, you could pick up the phone and call me.
It happened last night.
Hey, listen, there's a right way to do things and a wrong way to do things.
And which one was this?
Look, you don't make a plan without consulting me. You don't circumvent the system. There are consequences.
Are you going to get killed for going on Kimmel?
You might get killed for being a little
Oh, Sean.
Look, you want to do Kimmel, you come to me. I'm your publicist. That's what I'm here for, and that's what I do, okay?
Talk about that. What is the price?
I don't know if there is one. It's just everyone's so sad and insecure, and they have to estimate. You know, they have to value their jobs, and they have to prove that their jobs are valuable. And you know, is there a price to paying? You know, if Jimmy Kimmel asked you himself rather than going through your publicist, you know, I don't know. I think. And again, is one of the things I try to put in the show, that these guys don't care about the system. These guys just want to be and want to do as they feel, as long as they're not hurting anybody. So I think Debbie is the motherly figure. She's the New York mom who's out here to kind of give it to them straight and not take any crap from them.
But the idea of a publicist telling you the truth, you buy that?
My publicist is outside. Ask her. I buy it, yeah, because everyone I've had relationships with in this town, I demand the truth, and I don't want to hear anything else, and I want to hear whether people don't like me. I don't want my time wasted, and I don't want to put myself in a world where I believe I'm somewhere else. So I think, you know, again, every case is different, and a lot of people do not want to hear the truth, and they make sure it's set up that way, and they make sure that the people around them understand that.
The show is called Entourage, and it's entering season 4.
Mm-hmm.
And debuts
April 8th, 20 episodes.
Get ready. Doug Ellen is the creator of Entourage. Doug, thanks for being on The Business.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure. Thanks.
We end today's show with the astonishing news that mega producer April Sciocco is working on a remake of Citizen Kane. Many will no doubt find the idea of remaking what is generally regarded as the finest film in history as sacrilegious and foolhardy. So we thought we'd ask Mr. Sciocco about his plans. April Sciocco, welcome to The Business.
Hey, thank you very much.
So you are you're going to remake Citizen Kane, probably the most revered film of all time. Aren't you concerned that you're going to, you're violating
the? It's pretty dated.
Now, what are you going to do that's different? That's going to update it.
Well, we're going to have younger stars. We got Jake Gyllenhaal signed on in the Orson Welles role. And we got a sister, too. I mean, this is the first movie that Jake and Maggie have been in the same movie. So
You have a sister as well? What part is she going to play?
She's going to play the part of Rosebud.
Of the sled?
Yeah, I mean, look, the whole movie revolves around the sled, right? You see, it's a big shot at the end. It's like
right.
The payoff, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if the sled is such a big deal in this movie, why don't you hear from the sled? I mean, isn't there more sled?
So she's going to provide sort of a voiceover for the sled?
No, she's going to be the sled.
So, Mr. Sciocco, I want to ask you, there are other sort of major roles, Joseph Cotten's role, for instance. Have you cast those roles yet?
We sent it out to Jack Palance, who's like one of my favorite actors ever, but we haven't heard back from him.
Well, you know, he actually died.
Explain why I haven't heard back from him.
Yeah, no, you can be in the outer office all day if you want.
All right. Okay. You know, well, I'm glad we talked about that.
I'm glad I could help you with that.
Yeah, thanks. So the other person is we thought, you know, because we wanted to kind of bring in kind of the urban crowd, we get a black guy, like Ice-T. So we sent out to Ice-T because I think he's great.
Maybe you should, you know, reach out to Big Daddy Kane. That would be nice symmetry.
Oh, my God. That's genius. Hey, Dolores, did you hear that? Genius. You're genius. That's beautiful.
Well, there you have it. April Sciocco, producer of the new Citizen Kane, starring Ice-T, possibly, and Maggie Gyllenhaal as the sled.
Look for it in a theater near you.
We'll keep an eye peeled. Mr. Sciocco, thanks for being on The Business.
Thank you, Claude.
A reminder for our listeners in Los Angeles that most stations carried this show yesterday. And that's The Business. Matt Holtzman produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. You can listen to this or any past program online anytime at kcrw.com/thebusiness. You can also podcast the show on KCRW's site or through iTunes. Our email address is thebusiness@kcrw.org. The Business is produced by KCRW Santa Monica and distributed by National Public Radio. I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner. We'll see you next week on The Business.
KCRW offers more than 20 podcasts covering politics, news, music, arts, and culture. For more details, visit kcrw.com.
Support for NPR podcasts comes from Acura, featuring the all-new turbocharged Acura RDX with super handling all-wheel drive. More at acura.com/RDX.